grandmother, we with CVS, we have Jin Long as the username.
Mm.
No, can you go back?
Yep.
Okay, this is what we're doing. Go back a little more, please. This is what the mirror sites do. See, those URLs are completely different. This is read-only access.
Okay.
One of the Jorge wanted to choose this as, even though this is really just currently set up as an alias for HWDev, we wanted the flexibility to be able to shift this to another machine if we wanted to for some reason. So you could reconfigure that. This URL should never ever change. And so mirrors won't have to, and other people wanting to get our source code won't have to deal with, you know, oh gosh, now it's changed to a different URL.
What slide number are you guys on?
We're
on the one that called, it's called mirrors.
Let's go back to where we were.
But now we're going back.
Now we're going back.
We are
okay.
Here. How it's different from CVS.
Thank you. Yeah, how it's different from CVS. So one of the main features of these new distributed repository management systems is the idea that you could work offline. You don't have to constantly be checking every little file into the main server and have a network connection the whole time, you know, which is, you know, more true with some older systems. With this system, what that means is that you get the entire history there. So for instance, with some systems, if you were like saying piping the output of like CVS log into more, it actually can leave a lock hanging on the central repository while you're going diddly 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 looking through that. You could be holding up other people from working. You're gonna have your own copy of everything. You can review the entire history of everything that's ever been done right there without blocking anybody else. Well, that's just one example of the kind of thing that you can do by having your own repository. As it turns out, the Git does a pretty good job of compressing it so that whole repository history is only about the same size usually as the actual files you have checked out. So if you said, what's my actual working directory size, that's only going to double in order to contain the history too. So it works pretty well. We did go back and find a few cases where people had perhaps accidentally checked in some really big things, and we've cleaned those all out. And Mark, again, did a tremendous amount of work to help push that forward.
I can purge files.
And Vanessa, right? And some others. So that's all fantastic, and we're getting prepared for that. We have nice compact histories now that we're ready to use with Git. So after that, you just work away in your local repo, and you commit locally there. So there's this extra distinction, right? Normally in the old days, you had your sandbox, and then you checked it in to the CVS server, right? So you just had two places. Well, you're gonna see that now we have more places because first of all, you have your own local repository. And then later, when you're satisfied that your changes are really right and you're ready to share them with other people, you'll push that up to the shared central repository. And so that's one additional layer of control. But also one little thing to do. And so then there's another level of control that you get. For instance, with CVS, if you had two changes that were related changes, with CVS you're only checking in an individual file. So I'm working on this file and I check in that file. If I change this.h file and that.c file at the same time, there's no way to make a unified unit where those changes happen together. But with Git, you do this thing called staging, where you add the two files to your stuff, or more, as many as you want. You can do as many operations as you want, and they will all appear as a single atomic unit that gets committed. And so that's a nice feature to have. So that's one of the things. But you'll have to learn a little bit, okay, now I've got to remember, okay, it goes into my staging area first, and then when I'm happy with what's in my staging area, and I'm ready to commit, I do a commit. Okay, with Git, you're gonna have way easier branching and merging. We're mostly talking about branching and merging today that you would do in your local repository. you can do an awful lot with that. That'll be a lot more powerful than what you've already had. There's also the ability to do branching and merging in the repository itself, but I'm gonna just avoid that all today because we've got plenty to think about already. So when you're all happy with your changes and you have a last minute chance to double check that things are as you wanted, for instance, have you made a mistake in your checking in your commit message, just a dumb typo or something you forgot to say? With Git, if you haven't published it yet, you still have a chance actually to go back and fix that message or even do larger, more involved changes. But anyway, essentially when you're satisfied that everything's the way you want other people to see your work, then you push it up to the central repository. There's something that happens when you do a central repository model, and that is, for instance, the way Linus Torvalds uses this on the Linux kernel is he has essentially a hierarchical structure. So he's got what he calls his like 11 lieutenants that each are in charge of different areas of the system, and he only pulls changes from them. So those are the only people on the planet that he pulls any changes from. They themselves have their own groups and subgroups, and they themselves have their own subgroups. You know, so there's thousands of people contributing to that, and you can do it in a hierarchical fashion. And he only uses pulls to do that, right? He never uses push, he just does pulls. So that's a different model. We're going with a central repository model initially, and we might modify that later on after we get comfortable with Git, but this will ease the transition, and it's very easy to set up, and it's very easy to use, and it's going to be familiar. So we're going with the central repository method. But one thing that happens when you're doing about it, think about you have what's in the central repository, and you have what's in your work directory, and you're trying to get those changes onto the central repository. So a merge needs to happen. But the way Git is designed, the central repository is a bare repository, which means it doesn't have any working directory in it. And also it wouldn't make any sense to have people, you know, getting in each other's way trying to handle a failed merge, right? So with a bare repository, there is no working directory to mess up in the first place. And what you have to do to make sure everything's gonna go smoothly is you have to first pull. So you pull from the central repository. If there's any mess ups that could cause a conflict, you resolve them in your sandbox and you get it all straightened out. And then when it's all ready, you push it up again. And if it's a very busy day at the repository, you may have to pull again and then you can push. But we all get through it and it's not too hard. Go ahead, please. I've tried to come up with a few little examples here. So here we have the idea that we wanted to make a new utility. So, you know, we have all these conversions like FOSTA to 2-bit and so forth. I thought this would be a fun one to have.
Yeah.
So, as usual, you just drop it into your directory where you're gonna start up, and here are utils. We make a new directory, change into that directory, create your files with VI or whatever. Sorry, Emacs, for those of you who use Emacs. And then you could do things like git diff and git status and see how things are changed. You'll notice here I'm doing git add. When I do a git add, it actually is storing it instantly into the content database, which I'll talk a little bit more about later. It also is adding it to the staging area. It's like the staging area, you could think of it as like an unfrozen commit. Okay, it hasn't been frozen yet, so it's still liquid. And you can modify it and mess with it. And then when you get it just right, bam, then you can do your real commit. So, which I think, I forgot to add. Git commit right there, bunk. Well, you see that maybe on the next slide.
Git commit
is
the thing.
So git commit needs to go right there, boink, And it works just like CVS commit. You can do a dash M, put your commit message in. Git status will show you lots of nice things. So you'll be using both git diff, git status, and also git log. Git status is handy because it will show you lots of summary information. It'll say like, oh, your branch is 2 commits ahead of the central repository or something like that. It'll tell you you have these files which are not tracked that are in your sandbox, and these files which are in your staging area, which they also call the index or the cache. It'll also show you what's dirty in your working directory. So git status is a handy little thing. It works in many ways like our old friend CVSup, right? Do you ever use CVSup, one word that Angie wrote? So this is the equivalent of CVSup. It has almost the same information. Okay, next please.
In this example, given that we're starting out with a diff, that seems like we're doing a diff against a known repository. So where is the how is the repository specified?
What this will do is diff it against your staging area. At this level, it's not in the staging area yet. There's a different way, so you can diff the working directory to the staging area, you can diff staging area to your branch head that you're working on, you can diff that to other things, you know, specific commits or tags or other kinds of branches and so on. This is the most common one that you'd probably do, and it's just the default, so I just showed you that one. I wasn't going to beat you up with a lot of details and every possible command line option, because Git does have a lot of commands and a lot of command line options, but you probably won't need most of those, so we're going to just ease into it with very simple things that are directly useful.
Could you read what the default diff is then? Does that go from your working area
to
staging area?
Working to staging is the default diff. So you'd put dash dash, right here you'd put dash dash cached, or I think later versions of Git support dash dash stage, which is just a the identical thing.
How does it know where these files belong? How does it know where they go?
Because of where you are in the directory structure.
It just uses a directory path?
Yeah.
You don't look like you add the file, you add the directory.
Can this just be any directory path anywhere?
Oh, Git doesn't actually directly track directories at all.
Oh, wow.
The directory is not a content to it, so it only tracks file contents.
So this can be.
It knows what paths everything is in, but it doesn't store anything in an empty directory. So,
is this a directory in the source tree or anywhere?
Well, it's somewhere in the hierarchy.
It's in your sandbox. This is actually a Git sandbox at this point.
Okay.
This is a Git repo we're inside.
All right. So I better be in that.
Yeah. Yeah. If you tried to run Git outside of any repository, it would tell you.
Oh.
Yeah, it would say something like.
Well, same as CVS, right? It doesn't recognize bare files unless you're in the directory.
Yeah.
Or you have the other path. Maybe.
And so the process to add new files is kind of similar to CVS. You do it and add, and then you do a commit.
That's right.
Right.
And one thing that is different from CVS is, and I don't have it in this example, I wonder if the next example shows it. It doesn't matter, but I'll just say it. If you edit a file, you also git add it. And you might say, why the hell do I have to add it? I already added this file. Well, it makes a lot of sense, actually, and what Git's doing is when you say add, it's adding this new version, right? You had an old version before, this is a new version. I need to add the new version into my object store. So it's actually adding it. It is a new thing, it's a new version of that thing. So you're adding that new version.
So you always have to do an add and a commit.
And once you've added this and committed it, and it's gone into your, you know, branch head, it's going to then know about that file. That's called a tracked file. So for instance, if you compile your .c file and it makes a .o file as just a side effect of compiling, that .o file is just some extra trash in your working directory as far as most processes are concerned. And it would be a file that's called untracked. And so in many ways it's ignored. We're gonna be converting all the CVS ignore stuff to git ignore, and you can extend and add that if you need to, but I don't think we're gonna have very much call for elaborate git ignore stuff.
And did you need to do, do you need to do a git add for the pasta to money directory there?
No.
No.
The very fact that you add this content here will make those directory entries appear and be tracked in that sense. I believe git tracks like your group rewrites, you know, like a 640 or something, but I don't think it actually tracks user ID itself. Anyway, let's advance. So the idea here is, suppose that, well, we wanted a little example that actually showed you using a branch instead of just, you know, modifying stuff, adding it, and checking it in. So here in this case, something that you can do super easily in Git, which is lovely, is a branch. And if I just say git branch with nothing after it, it's going to show me which ones are active. If I said git branch and specified a particular name, it will make a new branch with that name. And if I said git branch with a new, when it does, by the way, when it does, if I said git branch and, you know, bananas or something, right, that bananas branch would actually be, it would have the same value as your current master head. Master is the default branch that you get when you first check out your source code. And so you would basically get a pointer, in effect, to the same thing, the same commit. It's the same place in this history, which is represented as a big tree, which I might mention a little more later about. At that point, I can start to diverge those. So if my branch starts out just being a clone of where the head was on the master branch, your normal default thing, now I'm off over here. And as I make changes and commit, it's moving in a different space compared to where the master branch is moving. And I can later bring them together or compare them and diff them and do other things like that. Well, branching by itself is not that hard in that many source code control systems, but usually the merging is where it gets more painful. And so Git makes the merging a lot easier than most systems as well. So in this case, I'm going to do a git checkout, and if I am making a new one, I could have just said git branch space blue music, right? But it, then usually the first thing you do after you make that branch, you're going to check it out. So this is a shorthand for checking it out, making that branch and checking it out in one step. So now, and when I do that, it'll, at this point, the branch will not have diverged from the main one, so there wouldn't be much for git to do. But had you been working on branches and were switching between them after a lot of development had taken place, when you switch that branch, Git's going to have to change your working directory so that it matches the new branch. So every time you do a switch from one branch to the other, that's some actual work that Git has to do. So then we're off in an area where we can work by ourselves without disturbing anybody else and without disturbing the main line of development. We have kind of a nice place where we can test a specific thing that we wanted. This could be a bug fix, it could be a new feature, it could be actually testing somebody else's changes on something. There could be all kinds of handy reasons why branches are useful. And Git makes them ridiculously easy to use, so we're probably going to get into doing more and more and more with them. But at first, I should say, first, a lot of people, they may never care about a branch and may never need one. And that's fine. You know, if all you need is some very simple changes and you just do them on your master branch, that's a good way to start. And you can ease into more advanced things if you need them. Okay, so I'm on my new branch, all ready to go. I add some new content, and notice it's all gonna be committed as one unit here. So for instance, my change to this is gonna go along with that and that. All the change goes together and gets committed. And maybe I didn't get quite all done with my new feature or my on my local branch here. So go ahead. Maybe I got distracted, I had to work on another project, and I come back a few days later, I'm ready to resume. But, look, it takes a while to finish, and other people have been adding in changes, and, you know, I'm thinking, gosh, maybe this won't get even done completely this week, but I want to make sure that my, you know, source code and my testing makes sense with the latest things that are going on in the system. So I want to pull from the other master branch. So there's actually more than this way to do it, but let's just do the very simplest thing, which is this. You just go back to master and check that out. You do a pull, which will make sure that master is essentially your version of master in your local repo is now the same as the one in the central repo. That's what's happening here.
Say, Galton, when you say checkout, I mean, that seems to have a different context than CVS checkout, which would be like your initial checkout of a branch. In this case, I mean, you already have master. So when you do checkout, what exactly are you doing?
It's like you've gone into an alternate reality. Okay?
We've already done that.
You get to flip into alternate realities and go back and forth, and it's like, whoa, I'm on this branch with all this stuff happening. And whoop, you can time travel, you can do all these things,
that's
right?
That's check out master.
Okay. But in this particular case, maybe we should talk about where we're traveling. So I guess he's assuming
the
branch.
Right. So in this case, you'd be like somebody who does all their work on little branches and they just keep their master branch. That's the way that they keep track of what's going on in the central repo and how they pull in work from other people. So you update your master branch and then you can do things like diff. You can go back to your Blue Music. You can diff against the master. And then if you're happy with it, you just merge it. Look how easy that is. Get merge master. And assuming there's no conflicts, boom, you're done. It's now updated all the stuff that you need, and you can recompile and retest to make sure that the changes that you were going to add to the system when they're ready are still working with the latest version that's out there. And so, all this without actually talking about any more complicated central repository stuff that you can do with Git. So then just repeat, you know. And so this could be an extended development branch. Now let's say that we're finally done and we're gonna go ahead and push those changes out and share them with the whole world. So
what does checkout master do versus pull? So I mean, because checkout isn't like updating.
Oh, what happened? Right? Can you
so
go back?
Pull is what updates it.
At the start of this whole thing, assume that I'm on master. Up here I'm on master. If I had actually had an easy way to display this, it would say, get branch shows an asterisk next to master, and that's your master.
So checkout is just switching you to that
branch.
It's not actually checking. It's just saying, okay, now I'm switching you to master.
Right, and only the first time I'm creating it do I need to add the dash B here. If you're just switching to it and it already exists, you don't do this dash B. I should emphasize that.
When you do git checkout master, it's not doing anything other than saying, okay, now you're in the context of your master branch.
That's
it's
it.
Changing your context. It's
exactly.
Not updating anything.
I'm going back to this alternate reality here, which doesn't have any of my work on Blue Music in it.
Right. It's just.
But I can pull everybody else's changes that they've been committing to the central repository really easily. And notice that pull does two things. It fetches changes from the central repository in terms of all these Git objects that are stored. It just populates your tree of objects. And then the last part, though, that it does, see, a Git fetch really will pull in all the objects, but a Git pull is a Git fetch and a merge afterwards. So
why aren't the other people's
and
changes?
Whenever you do a merge in Git, it'll actually create a new commit implicitly.
Why aren't the other people's changes in the master? What are they if they're not in the master?
Well, they can be in their own repositories. Other people's changes could be in their working directories, in their staging areas, in their own local repos, finally pushed up to the central repository.
Are they
in
the master?
I'm getting.
So master is being used in two senses here, which I think is a little bit confusing. So there's the master, which is your local branch called master, which is the default branch, if you don't make up the music. And then there's also the master, the sense of the master repository.
The central repository.
He's using central for that.
Yeah, so master and central are not the same. Central repository also has a master, and that master may or may not match your local master until you get pulled, and then it will match.
That's correct.
Master the same as main branch on.
It's the same as main branch.
Yeah, I guess it's sort of like head almost.
And you sometimes have to remember to do a fetch. For instance, if you get into more details on those, I don't think I want to do
it.
Yeah, so theoretically, if someone else creates a branch with the exact same name as yours, you could theoretically.
That's okay.
But you could pull their changes if you didn't get pulled inside that branch.
You mean have like two people directly share with each other instead of going through the central repository?
No, it would go through the central repository, but your branch.
Repository doesn't know about your branches.
Right.
That's right.
Oh, okay. It doesn't go up.
They're all private. The branches are private.
There are ways to share your branches into the central repository, but I'm avoiding that here. It's a little more, and I don't want to, it's a little can of worms, which I'm not wanting to face this.
We don't need that. That is actually very important.
We were at the point where we had three people working on a branch, we might need to do it.
Yes, there will be times when we need to do it, it's true.
It's more like that in the central that you probably have a branch for maintenance purposes, right? For some particular user only.
Yeah.
Kind of one off, right? But you need to, we try to avoid that.
Yeah. The branches are easy to create in your local repository, they're easy to use for your own purposes, mm-hmm. and they're easy to delete when you're done. Mm-hmm. Although I would warn you that. When you delete your branch in Git, it really forgets it. It's just gone. You might be able to find old records of it in your ref log if it hasn't been cleaned out over time. But that's something we want to be just a little bit careful about with the central repository. Be careful about deleting our branches in the central repository. Okay.
But just to clarify a little bit, Antonio's question. If I do git checkout dash v blue music,
yeah,
and I do my work and whatever committed and so forth, and then Larry does git checkout blue music. He's not going to see my blue music,
and if
he hasn't created a blue music,
it wouldn't exist at all.
It wouldn't exist at all. And so, if we wanted to share a branch, then we would have to do something else.
There's an additional thing that you have to do.
That's what I wanted to clarify. Yeah.
And also, though, I should warn you, there's a slight loss of fluidity when you start to share it with other people. In other words, as long as it's just on your local repo only, Git is almost unlimited in the number of ways you can screw around with it. But the minute you start having shared history with other people, that ties your hands a little bit.
That's a good point.
As much as possible to get you want to avoid destroying shared history. Okay.
Got one other thing. Now, I know that because of how unwieldy CVS branching is, we always use it sort of for private branches, but with the more flexible branching scheme, and people do this in the industry, is you might branch your release. And so you could be maintaining and patching the release without.
Oh, yeah, that'll be done for sure.
So, yeah, downstream, for sure. Think about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. That'll be automatic. So you mean like whenever we have a new one, like V233, yes, there's going to be a branch for that in the central repository. But when I do the make and I do all the build stuff for the thing, I have to worry about that. But you guys can just forget about it. People who are the local, on Buildmaster duty will eventually have to learn a little bit more about that so that, they could troubleshoot something if it went wrong during the build, but other people could just ignore it cheerfully.
Except for those of us who check in buggy code, and then we need to do something for a patch for a build, right?
Git is powerful enough to allow all kinds of sophisticated things that we could do with it in the future, but I'm going to just leave it for a future discussion. It's okay. Go ahead. So now finally, we've been working on our Blue Music, and we want to get them, get, you know, both Master and Blue Music up to date. And in all the other cases, I've only been merging from the Master into Blue Music. I've never gone the other direction. I've just been pulling in other people's changes. But my changes still exist only on that Blue Music branch. And now for the first time, I'm gonna go back here, I'm gonna check out Master, and I'm gonna maybe, just because I like to be careful, you know, I might even do a pull up here, you know, right there, it doesn't matter too much. And then I'm gonna maybe do a git diff against from my current Master over to Blue Music to verify, hey, this is really what I expected. So I'm about to push it all the way up and share it with other people, and I just wanna be sure it's right. So I'm diffing it, and then I'm merging it in when I'm happy with what's actually gonna happen from that merge. And then I might need a final pull, and then you can do a git push. Now, if you just forget the git pull and somebody else has added something else, the worst that'll happen is git will give you a sort of error message. Maybe not the most user-friendly error message, but you get the idea that, oh yeah, I have to do another git pull. And then I can finally do my push. And then, now this is important, when you're really sure you don't need it, go ahead and nuke it. Like if it's been weeks and that code is already out there on the round robin and it's totally working and that branch has done its job, no one's ever gonna need it again. And besides, if you actually had to do some special work on Blue Music again in the future, you could just make a new Blue Music branch for that new work. So, you know, at that point you could say, I'm gonna delete that.
So, I have a question. At least for CVS, like one of the things that I use a lot is where there'll be changes in other files that I have, but I only want to commit changes for one file that I have
right
at that point. Is that possible with
sure,
this?
Because you would just only stage the one that you want to change.
Oh, okay.
So if you say git add just the one file, your commit's only going to take what you staged. That's great. Yeah, total control that way. And if you've accidentally added something to your stage, there's a little command that will take care of pulling it out. I didn't mention it here, but actually I probably should. There's an actual git mv command, which you can use to move things. And git does a pretty nice job of tracking renames, so we'll have more freedom to do that. That was one of the motivations. So instead of just using regular Unix mv to move something, you want to, if you're in your sandbox and you're moving a file, you want to use git space mv. And this will also just make sure that the history is a little bit cleaner. If you actually just did, you know, remove it and add it somewhere else, it wouldn't be the end of the world, and Git might figure it out anyway. But if you do it with the git move command, it for sure can be tracked. And then when you're doing things like git blame and stuff like that, oh, look, it's trying to find out where this file was, and you're looking through some past ancient history when the file used to be over there with a different name. And it's able to track all that stuff and show you who did it and what it used to be called and all sorts of stuff. Git blame is the equivalent of CVS
and
my favorite.
Hey, Gold, in this sequence here, where does the conflict show up when you have conflicts?
Conflicts look just like you're used to them from CVS.
But which command here do they show up in?
Pull.
Pull is going to do a merge into your branch where you have your changes.
Unless you could also probably get conflicts with yourself if they get merge Blue Music.
Yes,
stage.
That's absolutely true. Mm-hmm. So this merge is merging in stuff from the Blue Music branch. This pull is merging in stuff from the central master. Okay. Yeah.
So, Gold, from that perspective, would a git push from Blue Music, would that just go to the central, or would that go to master, or is it something you just wouldn't
git
do?
Git push would not normally be a tracked branch, and wouldn't normally push to anywhere by itself. There's ways that you could create like a tag, a branch called Blue Music, right, which would be in the central, but I'm not talking about that right here. So,
I see. That would be Larry and Tim working together, maybe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Git pull is so powerful, actually, you can use it to pull in entire other repositories. Like if you had, for some reason, split things into two different repositories earlier, change your mind later and wanted to bring them into one repository, you can do a git pull on that other thing and suck the whole thing right into your git system. Pull it all in and create a merge at the end, which is quite powerful, although I guess you could do it accidentally, which wouldn't be so great. But let's see, one of the really neato things about Git is these SHA-1 hash IDs. So this is what they call content addressable storage. In other words, if you have some content, a file or whatever it is, and you run the SHA-1 hash algorithm over it, and you get a number like this. And you can be absolutely certain, if you see that same number elsewhere in the system, that that's the same object. And so if you actually stored, even in two different directories, you had identical content, it would actually just point to the same object. Because Git will hash that. So the same content has the same SHA-1 hash, regardless of what its name is. And also, if you tried to add a file that you've already added or something, no, you wouldn't get a duplicate because it's already identical and we don't store multiple copies of identical objects. Also, these are supposed to be globally unique, so that if someone showed you this number, you know, somebody that you were talking, struck up a conversation with, you know, on the other side of the world or whatever, and they have this same number, you know it's the same content. The probabilities are so astronomical of getting that number by chance that it's considered to be virtually certain. You can just relax and trust that it's right. But on top of that, Git can do all kinds of neat things with this because it will store the blobs, the file contents. It will store the directory trees this way too. And it doesn't have to go, when it's trying to compare two places, it doesn't have to go and check, whoa, these huge directories in every file and every possible subdirectory. It can easily go, boink, these are the same. Boink, these are the same. Boink, these are the same. With this comparator. And it is really fast. So it's kind of fun to think about just the technology behind Git, because this is a what they call a directed acyclic graph, which means if you make a graph, your arrows have direction to them. That's the directed part. The acyclic part means you won't ever come back to where you started, in a sense. Now, it doesn't mean you can't branch. Branching in your graph is okay. You can have multiple paths that you can go forward, but or backward in time, as this would be. But actually visualizing this will help you understand what's happening in your Git repository if you feel interested in understanding those things.
I want a diagram now.
When you make a commit, it's basically, so your content is gonna get, you say git add and it's gonna add your blob, your file and the blob. Mm-hmm. It's gonna also add this number for your blob into the tree, so there's a new tree record that will get added into the system too. And if it needs to, if that tree is just really a subdirectory, is part of a parent subdirectory, and that has caused a change in there, then that one too will get saved, and it'll go right up to the top of the tree. And so when you finally make a commit, what Git's doing is it's storing that very top tree, which recursively represents everything. It's the whole thing. Every file and every tree for this branch and this version of things. And then the other part that Git commits besides your tree, which contains all your actual content, is it'll store like your user ID. You're the user who's actually making this commit, so it'll make a record of that. It'll also store a pointer to the previous parent from which this new content was made. So the previous commit on your branch. You've got a new commit, that new commit points back. It has one parent pointer there that points backwards to the previous one. Here's an interesting thing. This is surprising to me. But I'm so used to CVS. What CVS does is it stores diffs for efficiency, and it's kind of cool how well it works. I mean, it's very compact. You know, you can have lots and lots and lots of these diffs, and you know, it represents a lot of changes, and you know, it doesn't take up very much storage space to do that. It's quite compact in that way. In fact, if your first initial way of thinking about how would that work is you'd think, oh, well, they store the initial file the way it first was, and then they start storing diffs after that, right? But as you can imagine, you're usually working way out here at the end of a long history where, and you wouldn't want to have to read all that stuff backwards, right? That's a lot of diffs. So, of course, CVS is smarter than that. RCS, I should say, I suppose. RCS stores the current file and reverse diffs all the way back in time. But it does get more and more expensive the deeper history you go to do that. And Git just doesn't even do the diff game. Git calculates diffs on the fly for whatever point you need. If you're going from this point on this graph over to this point on this graph, you get a diff right between them. It doesn't actually have to go through all the individual diffs at all, even though it can calculate them and uses the differences when it's doing merging and branching and other stuff like that. But that means it can go right to this version of the file here and that version of the file there. Bam. It's really fast. On the other hand, you'd say, well, wait a minute, aren't we gonna, if we're storing new versions of these files over time, aren't we gonna, you know, use a lot of space and stuff like that? Well, it turns out that you run git gc and pack, and it does a very lovely job of, when it's packing, of discovering commonalities between pieces and arranging them in a pack, which compresses it very well, in fact, so that, like I said, usually your entire history is only twice as big as your working directory.
So cool.
Yeah.
So this hash is bidirectionally unique then, right? I mean, you can get back to the original content from the hash?
No.
No?
Sadly not. Well, if you did, that would mean someone could...
That would mean you would be very famous.
Yeah.
That's a difficult problem to solve. It's because of the hash nature, it means it's sort of...
No. At the end, it's, you know, projecting whatever, you know, if it's a big file, 100,000 bytes, you know, it's used as input to get those out.
Yeah, well, that's what I originally thought, but then something you said along the way led me to think it was the opposite. But just go ahead.
So, yeah, usually what you do is you take the content, turn it into a hash number, and then compare hash numbers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I understand.
Yeah, but if you... Okay. Let's see. So normally you would, a node here in this graph, a commit, right? It's gonna, typically we just extend by, we make some more changes, we just commit it, we make some more changes, we commit it, we make some more changes, we commit it. So each commit has one parent pointer pointing backwards. But when a merge takes place, it has two parents. And this is one of the things that's really great about Git compared to some of the older kinds of source code management systems. It makes the whole system work in a really wonderful way, is this ability to have more than one parent. And in fact, you can actually do a merge between as many branches as you want to simultaneously if you feel like it. Git will handle it no problem. Let's see. I guess I already mentioned this, that we're using a simple central repository model, but in fact you could set up and establish all kinds of things like fancy hierarchies and other, you know, subgroups within subgroups and subgroups, blah, 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 where different teams are concentrating their work in this area and have ways of sharing that. Of course, what you want to do ultimately is be able to connect this to something like Redmine, right, where issues that you're tracking have a connection to the source in Git, and so that you can, you know, get issues taken care of and resolved. Does anybody have any more questions?
Could you go back to the previous slide? So there, with the git pull and the git push, it seems like there's an implicit argument there. So it's getting git from the same, the git pull is getting it from the same place where you originally cloned it from. Mm-hmm.
On the master branch, right? So that's one of the things.
And you do have an option to pull in things from other places too, I guess, if you gave it a parameter. Mm-hmm. And similarly, the push is pushing it, the way we have it set up, it's then pushing it back to the same place we got it from.
Yeah, you could go to other places. Like I said, you want to be a little bit careful about it, and I didn't want to get into how to do all that. And
That's okay. I don't think we necessarily.
When you check it out, it creates this master branch, which is a tracking branch, so it's automatically connected to the central repository, which is actually by default called origin. But whatever you clone from is called origin. So it doesn't necessarily mean origin always means my master central repository. And that's just what we're doing here.
Right. In the genome wiki page, that's, I guess, one of the questions I have. You have some examples where you have like git diff origin, git push origin master. Mm-hmm. And I guess my question is, the git push origin master would probably, presuming you were already checked out master, it would be just the same thing then as
probably.
A git
yeah.
push. Okay.
Yes, that would work.
And
can you do git checkout origin?
No, you'd have to specify more than origin. You'd have to specify a specific branch as well. So there probably would have to be a whole extra lesson on dealing with central repository in a more sophisticated way and dealing with other remote repositories and where you're in a more peer-to-peer relationship or something like that.
Yeah, and it certainly enables it, and I think you made a good call to not try to go through all of that here. There's one, but since, you know, we may use it at some point, but our group's not the size of the Linux kernel, you know, team, and we've got lieutenants.
Right, yeah. That's sense. What I figured. We have, like, approximately 30 to 60 regular users, and that fits within the centralized model just fine.
Then I have, one more question just based on the wiki. It looks like there's a git config that needs to happen first, and you have the user.name and then your name here in quotes. And would that be like, you know, for me, Jim Kent, or would it be, Kent, you know, my username?
For the main name, I think you probably should put your real name.
So like here, this one.
Yeah, you could put Jim Kent there, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah, it wants your username, not
your login.
Yeah, it can get your login from the OS environment.
Okay.
Your checkout.
Okay.
Yeah.
In fact, it complains. The git won't let you commit or do anything until you have that variable set.
Anything else? I also think it seems like people are going to be researching things that they need as they come up, and I think it'd be really useful if people could add to the wiki.
I plan to add some more. examples and like saying things like, you know, CVS up is the same as git status and so on.
You'll put a burden on the wiki editor if that happens.
Yeah.
But there's ultimately there's so much that the thing can do that if you wanted to get the most out of it, you'd just have to learn about the tool
if people
sort of
find, you know, key little things that they've discovered that
yes.
they think would be useful to the group. That's
very useful
to
tips and
sure
things
to
like that. Yeah.
Yeah, we've got the user blog at the end of the wiki page, right?
Are the tutorials on the internet good enough?
They're generally very good,
yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
We do have a couple of minor spots where, like, we're using 1.6 and 1.7 is already out, and so sometimes you may see documentation that has, like, oh, there's this extra parameter that they added in 1.7 that we don't have in 1.6, you know, that'll happen a little bit, don't worry about it. I decided instead of asking the admins to push us into 1.7 right away, that by hanging back a little bit at 1.6, we'll make it kinder to the other users out there that are trying to find an RPM for their OS with Git on it, you know.
Do we need to post instructions about how to install the Git system, the software?
I don't think so.
Is it like a default package that's in every system on my laptop?
Try typing Git on your laptop. It's online.
It's available on a lot of systems. We don't. If people can't do that, that's a good barrier for them to not be editing code.
Oh, if they're not able to install it,
they don't want to edit
I'm
code.
Sure that,
they just
I'm
want
sure
to check
actually,
out. They just want to check out a static
sure
document. They don't want to edit anything.
I misspoke. I did install it. It was pretty easy to install it for the.
Well, you say port install Git.
I'm sure that there's a tar.gz available on the Git on the Git website that lets you install it.
Anything you want.
On a Mac, wow.
Yeah.
If you had Git, you could get
Git. You have to install port first.
Why do you
install port first?
Well, type port, install port 18.
Smoke starts coming out.
A couple of environment variables to set.
There's some settings if you like color. Oh, there's that command that is handy sometimes for piping the output of Git into, like if you're doing a Git log and there's a bunch of commits being displayed. TIG, which is Git backwards, T-I-G, has been installed a lot of places, I think, and may be handy.
If you want to just use it on HTW dev, is that a problem?
It's there.
Yeah. And you know, it's super easy to start at your repository. Suppose you had some side project where it's just some stuff you wanted to manage and it had a little bit of versionitis to it, where you wanted to be able to keep old things or just have a backup of it a little bit. You know, you could just make yourself a Git repository and stick those files in there. So for instance, when I developed the Git reports for this, instead of putting them in CVS, I just made a little side repository and did the development there. Later on, I'll move it into our real development stuff.
If I install it on my laptop, is there any difference if I install 1.7 or 1.6? Should I install 1.6, or do you not know if there's any compatibility?
I think it would be safer to install 1.6 because that's what we have. But I haven't actually really, I couldn't say that I fully tested and know exactly what will happen with different versions of Git interacting.
How do I synchronize my HTW dev copy of everything and keep it the same on my laptop and vice versa? I work a little bit on the laptop and I work a little bit on dev. I want it all to be the same all the time.
Well, you have ways in which you could push your changes from your laptop to your home directory. That wouldn't be very hard to set up an account with either.
But just for ease of use, you might just want to decide to have one or the other rather than synchronizing, like always have your repository on your laptop or always have
you might want to work offline while you're on the airplane.
Exactly.
Well, I don't do that now, so I mean.
Or
sometimes
when,
you don't
or
need
when
to
we're having a little power problem here.
Right. But if there's overhead to keeping things sunk,
ours?
And
it's
cron job can do it.
Yes, you can do it.
Certainly,
I mean,
cron job
with
can
the,
keep them up to date.
You could certainly do it with push and pulls. Then I'm sure there's some script you could set up. If
some
you
kind
really
of name,
to
so
do
it's
it
all the same
that.
Name.
But the
yeah.
simplest thing would be.
You'd probably have to decide whether you wanted just to control it and like say you had a specific development branch and that's the only one you wanted to bring over and keep in sync versus all of your branches. If you had a bunch of branches,
all of your
branches to pull all of them across.
How are you
going to
manage multiple branches?
Different development projects.
Okay, I think we need to, take these questions offline first. Let us thank all the people who put this together.